You're with SBS Radio.
What does it mean for an Aboriginal woman from Victoria to join the Federal Senate and to take over from the retiring Greens, Richard Di Natale? And how would it feel if you were a woman bringing with you to the Senate a wealth of community and activism experience, plus bringing with you experience working as chair of the Victorian NAIDOC Committee, Indigenous Lead, Amnesty International, and being the first ever Aboriginal person to be elected as an MP into the Victorian Parliament? I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and this is the NITV podcast.
I was born in August 1973, so I was one of the first babies in that health service. And so that's how I've been raised. I've been part of that movement and part of, you know, part of the struggle, which we know so many, or in fact too many, of our people face today.
You just heard there from our guest today, Lydia Thorpe, politician and activist. Previously, Lydia was the very first Aboriginal person from Victoria to be elected to state parliament back in 2017. Lydia was a member for Northcote in the Victorian Legislative Assembly. Now, 3 years on, Lydia firmly has her eyes set on federal politics in Canberra. And in June this year, won pre-selection with the Greens, replacing former Senator for Victoria, Richard Di Natale. Self-determination is a big priority for Lydia Thorpe, and Lydia comes from a long line of strong Aboriginal women. Her grandmother, Alma Thorpe, was one of the founders of Melbourne's Victorian Aboriginal Health Service. Lydia is passionate about the grassroots movement and Aboriginal community control and self-determination.
Nan Edna Brown set up the Aboriginal Funeral Benefit Fund, which, raised money to allow our people to be buried with dignity rather than being buried as paupers as they were in those days. So both my nans have played a pivotal role in my life and my journey. And, you know, the number one rule in our family was never forget where you come from and always look after your people. And so that's just how we as a family have worked and lived our lives. Nan was part of setting up the Aboriginal Health Service in 1973, in September 1973. I was born in August 1973. So I was one of the first babies in that health service. And so that's how I've been raised. I've been part of that movement. And part of, you know, part of the struggle, which we know so many, or in fact too many, of our people face today. So being part of the establishment, or, you know, being a baby then, but seeing how community come together to look after one another, and that no one was ever left behind in those days, and to see how we operate as communities in 2020, I feel that, you know, those sentiments have been lost a bit, and that we do leave people behind, and that we do have this great divide between rich and poor in blackfella world. So I don't know where that came from, and it's quite shocking to see that, you know, right at the other end of the scale, we have very high-powered, highly paid blackfellas, which is great, but then on the other end of the scale, we have people struggling to put food on the table and pay rent and, you know, just everyday survival. So that certainly wasn't the philosophy of community control, and self-determination in the way I've been raised. And I want to tackle some of that too, because we need to get back to looking after one another as a people.
Treaty is a hot topic right around the nation and is currently on the table for Aboriginal Victorians. But what does a treaty in Victoria actually look like? NITV Radio's Bertrand Tuganami explains.
For 230 years, Australia has been one of the only Commonwealth nations without a treaty with its First Peoples. But in Victoria, this is changing. In 2019, First Nations people of Victoria elected a 31-member First Peoples Assembly of Victoria, which is the elected voice for Aboriginal people and communities in future treaty discussions. All the members of the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria are proud Victorian Aboriginal leaders and traditional owners, elected and appointed by their communities. On its website, the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria emphasizes that it will not negotiate a treaty and or treaties with the state government. Rather, the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria will work with the state government to create the treaty negotiation framework for negotiations and the rules and processes by which a treaty or treaties can be agreed in Victoria. The Assembly is helping set up three important steps to lead to treaty negotiations. The Treaty Authority, which is an independent umpire through the treaty process. The Treaty Negotiating Framework, which will set out how treaties can be agreed in Victoria. And a self-determination fund so Aboriginal communities can be on a level playing field with government. The First Peoples Assembly of Victoria builds on the hard work of Aboriginal leaders of the past and support Aboriginal communities through the treaty process, which is now enshrined in law.
And so let's hear what Lydia Thorpe's position is on the issue of the treaty.
It's not a treaty. Let's be clear. It's not a treaty. It's a mechanism that the Victorian government have chosen to use as part of their agenda, not ours. And that was very clear in the outset when we were debating the legislation and when I personally was trying to strengthen the legislation to enable us to truly self-determine where this goes. So the fact that the whole Parliament, except for the four Greens at the time, three Greens, at the time voted against acknowledging that we as Aboriginal people are the sovereign people of these lands. So it was denied in the Victorian Parliament that we are sovereign people. That was the first hurdle, I suppose, or the first denial of who we are and our rightful place in this country. The second denial was the fact that they voted down having a elders body established as part of the treaty process and included in the legislation. So that was surprising. I kind of knew that they would vote down the sovereignty question, but I didn't think that they'd vote down having elders participating. So that was clear from the outset that this was going to be a bit of a dodgy process. They were advised to include all of the 38 nations around Victoria. It's very clear that there are 38 language groups. They chose to ignore that advice and they went down the native title path and chose the corporations that they already deal with by giving them reserved seating. And the remainder of the seats went to an Aboriginal role or an election of, inverted commas, Aboriginal Victorians. And they only had 7% of the Aboriginal, the Victorian Aboriginal population turn out to vote. So that means 93% of Aboriginal people who live in Victoria did not participate in the Aboriginal role that they had set up. So I think that shows also people's trust in the process. Mm. So, look, there's so many red flags, you know, selling off Crown land in the middle of a treaty process. That was meant to be a negotiation point, and, you know, the government, through the Premier Dan Andrews, is selling off as much public housing and public land as he possibly can. So by the time it comes to negotiate, there'll be nothing to negotiate. Then we look at the preservation and protection of our land and our waters, and we look to areas such as Gunai country, my own country, being logged at the rate of, well, you know, it was 10 MCGs per day a couple of years ago. They've actually, it's less than that now because they're running out of areas to log. We have totems about to become extinct. So, yeah, more red flags. They did announce that they would reparate Solan Gen, which was great, and it was seen to be part of the treaty process, but it's something that we've been campaigning on for decades and decades, and it's something that who knows how long it will take for them to actually get the dollars in their hands. They're running a consultation process and they're setting up bodies to further consult. So how many millions of dollars will go into that process before it actually gets to the people who need it, before they, you know, we've got a lot of elderly people who have been stolen, Jen, and they can't wait any longer. So I don't know. I hope that they do well, but there is no consent from me as a Gunai Gunditjmara woman until they show some good faith and stop the destruction of country. They stop incarcerating our people at the rate that they are. And since Daniel Andrews has been in power, the rates of imprisonment for Aboriginal people who live in Victoria has gone through the roof. Deaths in custody, removal of children, the rates are horrific. So, you know, what is a treaty? To me, a treaty is meant to bring us peace and is meant to stop this injustice that our people are facing every day. And I'm not seeing any of that. I'm seeing a lot of money being spent, quite a lot of money. People are being paid, you know, ridiculous amounts of money to do the job, but they're just writing plans and going out for consultation. I think the government needs to show good faith and start announcing some other measures that we can feel good about, instead of feeling, you know, a bit sceptical like me.
There are a number of priorities on Lydia Thorpe's list for her time ahead in the Senate, raising the age of criminal responsibility for all children in Australia, as well as treaty and education around that and what a treaty may actually look like for our nation.
Look, there's a number of things I want to set out to achieve. I still need to work out what portfolios I will be responsible for. And that, you know, that's a process I need to go through with my colleagues. However, I am very passionate about raising the age of criminal responsibility. I think that that's something that is quite achievable. I think that the messaging on that needs to not just be around our children. It needs to be around, inverted commas, Australian children, because that's who this country locks up, all children from the age of 10. And we'd like to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 14. That was certainly, you know, one of the campaigns that I led at Amnesty International when I was the Indigenous lead before I became a senator. And so I think that's quite an achievable outcome that I think we could pursue quite early. I think treaty is absolutely on the table. I think that's going to take some time. We need to educate the Australian population on what a treaty is, what it could look like, and not be hell-bent on you know, the other treaties around the world, and come from the angle of, you know, this is a blank canvas. We can make this treaty what we want to make it. But I also want to say to Aboriginal people out there listening that, you know, through a treaty process, it doesn't mean you're actually agreeing to treaty. We can go through the journey and talk about what we want and negotiate some quick wins or, you know, good faith actions that governments can take. But at the end of the day, if it's not good enough, we can say no. We can say no. Actually, that's not what we want from a treaty. That's not going to address the effects of colonisation and what it's done to our people and our land. So we can, at the end of the day, say no. So I think it's important that we reflect on that and be prepared to go on this journey together so that our clans and nations have a say and are at the table. And that's where I think the Uluru Statement went wrong, is it had an invite-only process. You weren't allowed to take in independent media, so you couldn't record the meeting for your own purposes. It was very, well-organised and well-orchestrated, whereas I think the way I'd like to see a treaty process is to ensure that every clan and nation gets to have a say on what they want and what they need, because it will be different for all of us around the country. And through that, we may find some common threads that can overarch the treaty narrative for this nation.
Lydia Thorpe, the Senator-elect for the Greens, and is due to be sworn into the Senate in Federal Parliament at the end of August 2020, when Parliament is due to return, albeit late due to COVID-19. I'd like to thank today in production NITV Radio's Bertrand Tuganami. And don't forget, you can tune in to listen to our NITV podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And tune in to NITV Radio. You can listen at 1 p.m. on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays on SBS One. I'm Kerry Lee Harding and this is an NITV podcast.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.